Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a long time coming. We are back. Welcome back to the Critically Extreme Podcast. We're going to take a look at the ups and downs of last year. So this is basically a year in review. I am your host, the ultra-violent delight, the hybrid killer, John Reagans. And we're in for a very wild ride. We're going to have no commercial interruptions, no cutaway music gags. We're going to go straight to the core. So be ready, because there's no stopping tonight. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get started. This is basically a podcast of top tens. So we are going to take a look at some of the top 10 things in each category I'm about to name off. We're going to talk professional wrestling. We're going to talk life. We're going to talk ESETs. We're going to talk everything and anything in between. Look at the highs and the lows of this past year in review. So let's start things off with the top 10 things that I have learned about my life this past year. Let's start with number 10. Relationships are overrated. So, when it comes to a relationship, you need to find a connection. But if you constantly search and obsess over trying to find one, you're going to be running into dead ends. That's what happened this past year with me. But luckily, I did find somebody. Luckily, I found somebody with the same intuition as me. And we clicked. Now, with that being said, why do I say relationships are overrated? Let's take a deep look into it. So, a relationship is overrated for the simple fact that there's Hollywood concepts that everything has to be perfect, the person has to look perfect, has to have a job, has to have this, has to have that. That's what a societal concept is, where society basically puts their hands in everything and makes it a far from obtainable perfection. And a relationship nowadays is hard to come by because people have these ridiculous standards of what they want. Nowadays, hookup culture is higher. Nowadays, people want this instead of that. Or people are too selfish when it comes to a relationship. And what I've learned over the past year when it comes to relationships is the fact that not every person's going to be on the same playing field as you. Not every person's going to want the same things you want. So don't focus on stuff you want. Focus on stuff you need. Focus on yourself first. Focus on what you need to rebuild before you jump into a relationship with somebody. Because I've noticed that. If you're not 100% or near 100% sure what you need to do about yourself and about your life, you're going to end up in a place where you don't even know what to do next. Now, one thing I've learned for sure is definitely work. Work on yourself. Work on getting to know who you are, what you like, what you don't like, how to better yourself. What traits to get rid of, what traits to adopt, you know? Don't let yourself falter into a place where mentally you think you're ready, but you know you're not. That is the biggest learning lesson I learned this past year. Now, I've noticed in relationships, well, quote-unquote relationships, if you have to work harder than your partner, you're not in a relationship. If you're obsessing over this fairy tale fantasy of wanting to be with somebody when you know mentally you're not ready, you're not in a relationship. When you're using somebody for your own benefit, or you're neglecting somebody's wishes, or you're lying to them, or you're treating them wrong, you're not in a relationship. You're in a position of power. If you use somebody's name as a label to say you're in a relationship, You're not in a relationship. You're just trying to fill a void, fill a trend. See, being in a relationship is more than just the physical intimacy. And that is something I learned years ago. It's all about the emotional connection, the mental connection. It's all about being there for each other, being cohesive. It's not about what you want to do in the bedroom. Trust me, that stuff's fine and dandy, but when it comes down to the brass tacks, folks, a relationship is about the foundation you two build. And it doesn't matter if it's man and woman, man and man, woman and woman. It doesn't matter if it's trans and non-binary. It doesn't matter if it's whatever the case. Because love is love. Right? It's the loudest emotion, as I always say. And with all the attempts I've had to try and find love, I stopped looking. And things just fell into place for me. So another huge thing I learned basically this year about myself is if you pull back the curtain and you stop forcing yourself to look, everything else will fall in place first. And that is something that is far beyond more beneficial than forcing yourself to look and get desperate. Because desperation just does not play hand in hand properly. Another thing I learned about myself is I'm very perseverant this year. I'm very dedicated. I'm very, out there. I recently got injured walking to work one day. It's before we got under lockdown. We'll be talking about that in a bit. But what ended up happening was there's a patch of ice. I fell, hurt my knee a little bit. My knee was bleeding. But that didn't stop me. Then a couple weeks later, I had a bit of a health scare where I think I had basically an adrenaline overload due to excessive caffeine use. Halfway through my shift, my body just goes numb. My eyes get a little blurry, and I'm seeing things, and my hearing starts to become more of a ringing sound. Yet I'm still able to do my job. I come home, sleep it off, go back to work, still not feeling the greatest. And no, it wasn't COVID. It was an adrenaline oversurge. It's like an overload of adrenaline and just your body basically firing off every cylinder at the same exact time, but not having enough fuel and gas to even it out and regulate it. I also learned that Mother Nature is hard on my body. I learned that not everybody is going to be on your level when it comes to critical thinking. I've learned that even the people close to you can still be toxic. I've learned that in life, when you're thrown into the sea, you gotta swim to the shore. Even if you feel like drowning, there's at least a few people ready to put you on a lifeboat to bring you there. There's a lot of stuff I've learned over the past year about myself that I never knew. There's a lot of stuff that I relearned about myself. Passions I fell back in love with. Stuff that has re-sparked my process of thinking and creative work. Now, we're going to move on to what I learned during the lockdown. There's a lot I learned about myself during these lockdowns. One thing is how dependent I was on caffeine, but also how withdrawn I was. I withdrew myself from a lot of people because I wanted to allow myself focus on what I need to do to get better. During lockdowns, I was more active in the eFed scene. I was more active streaming. I was more active in producing content. But when I started working again, all that took a back seat. And a lot of people think, oh, well, you're overwhelming yourself. No. It's not overwhelming yourself when you have priorities. And the bottom line is simple, folks. When it comes to a lockdown, you got to make sure mentally you're prepared. Financially, you're prepared. And you have food in the fridge. And you have food in the cupboards. Because if your main source of income is taken away due to buildings being closed and stuff, you're going to have to scrounge up as much as possible to get food around the house. I've had to do that majority of the time because of my eating habits. Not the greatest, but we'll be talking more about my eating disorders and stuff like that. So there will be content warnings, trigger warnings, but it'll probably be in a later podcast, a little more of peeling back the curtain, so to speak. But in all honesty, folks, we're in another lockdown, and I learned a lot more about myself that when I don't have to put all my energy into work, I'm able to put all my energy into creating stuff, building an income that way, monetizing my content eventually. But not just monetizing it for my own personal use. Monetizing it so I'm able to help other people. Because my payoff is having you guys, the listeners or my viewers, be confident in themselves. That's why I do these things. So those are the things I learned about myself over the past year throughout the lockdowns and throughout all the time and all that. So let's move on to some top 10s. We're going to start things off with the top 10 things I've learned about the eFed scene over this past year. 10. You're overlooked when you're good. You see, when you get labeled as a certain thing like a novelty act, but you're so good and so talented that people want to give you a chance, but they're too afraid to, you start incorporating that. And you start seeing how people treat their talent. And that is something that I've learned over the past year through experience. That if you give somebody a promise, you don't go back on your word when it comes to it. If you say you're going to groom somebody to be world champion, you groom that person to be world champion. If you say you got big plans for that person, don't job them out and then just throw a random championship at them, hoping to change things. If you promise that the character that you have plans for is going to get over, you help that person get over. You don't just sit there and just book your friends and play favorites and put the right hand in the pocket and just make it about you. You give everybody opportunity, especially those who've worked their ass off and have more talent than you can shake a stick at. So I learned that no matter how talented you are, if you're overlooked and people label you, you're not going to be good enough for them. And that's when you start proving them wrong. The ninth thing I learned was patience. Be patient with your opponent. Speak with your opponent. Talk to them about how you want to build your promo angle. Be patient with what they're doing. If they waste too much time, move on. Talk to management about it. The number eight thing is learning how management needs to be. The do's and don'ts of running a Fed. If you're a rookie Fed, don't make promises you can't keep. And don't put people out of the shuffle for stupid reasons. Okay? Also, if you're a part of management, don't tell people at the last second they're doing something for nothing. Because if person A is working their ass off and person B is not showing up because they quit the company 2 weeks beforehand, You tell that person instantly. Also, don't be the kind of Fed owner that only pushes people they care about. Give people opportunity. Don't lie to your talent. Don't manipulate your talent. Don't do any of that shit. That's not how you run a Fed. Also, don't boss people around. Don't be a dictator. And don't treat this thing, this hobby, as if it's a job. No one's signed a real contract and getting a paycheck in this game. So stop with that. That is not, I repeat, that is not how you build a Fed. And that's not how you build friendships. And that's not how you grow. Some people take this hobby so damn serious that they treat it like it's a paying job. And they treat their friends as if they're employees and they're beneath them. Another thing I learned in the Fed scene is no matter where you go, what platform you use. This is the number 8th topic. Drama will follow no matter what. Now, since this is the Critically Extreme podcast and we pull no punches, I will say this, and I will clear the air. KCW's Day Noah on TikTok, Heel Hugs on TikTok, tried to get me banished from the TikTok Discord wrestling circuit, EFED circuit. A startup rookie company started listening to the wrong people and screwed over quite a few talent, and then got blackmailed and manipulated by said assisted promotion. Now, what happens is, if you listen to the wrong people and you let the wrong people influence you, you lose sight on everything that this game is about. We'll touch more on that in a few moments. But I will say this. Don't accuse people you don't know. Because one, I've never interacted with anyone like Heel Hugs. And two, I've never really given a damn about that place either. The number 7th thing. And this is a very important one. Be consistent. Be to the point. Don't go on long-winded 20-hour segments with no base, no beginning, and no end. You want to get ahead? You got to be quick. You got to be to the point. You got to be direct. And you got to follow suit. Don't change your gimmick 4 times in a week. Don't change your name 7 times in a week. Don't change your moves 8 times in a week. Don't change your entrance music 7 times in a week. Be consistent. If something doesn't work, you talk to management and see what happens. See how they can help you. Number 6. 6th thing I learned this year in the EFED scene. If one person falls, everybody else picks them up. I've noticed some really crazy things happen over the past year with personal lives in the EFED scene. Our goal as a community is to build these bonds and these relationships where if one of us falls, but the 20 to 30 or 40 of us pick each other up at any given time. Become a family, help each other out. Have fun with the competition, but realize that's all that it is, a fantasy competition. If somebody reaches out, you help them. But if they keep making the same mistake over and over again, you got to find a way to get them help. Number 5. Pay attention to the storyline. This is a big one. You got to pay attention to the storyline because storylines, if you're in a storyline-based Fed, are a very vital piece of what the promotion's about and what the game is. If you don't pay attention to the storyline, you're going to lack cues. You're going to lack very important details that could help you out. You're going to lack the ability to actually build onto your story, to build onto your character. So pay attention to the storyline. Don't change it up halfway through. And definitely one thing I learned is don't let other people from the outside manipulate the story you're making. Number four, don't let personal vendettas control the narrative of your story or your promotion. Okay, you get into a disagreement with somebody, don't bury them or mock them or do anything stupid to like prove how petty you are. Because there's a difference between pettiness and just downright stupidity. Downright stupidity is where you basically take out your aggression on the person and bury them by putting them in bad situations. You want to have a grudge on somebody, that's your choice. But don't have a grudge on somebody and then humiliate them by using their character in degrading ways. Number three. Championships are not important. The moment you make your character and make your motive about championships and accolades, it's the moment you lose yourself on how much fun you're having. That ties into not taking things seriously. If you're in this to become popular, you're not in this for the right reasons. Number two, respect. Respect the rules the promotion has set. I mean, if it calls for no racist or homophobic shots, don't do that stuff. Don't be a homophobe. Don't be a transphobe. Don't be bigoted. Don't be racist. Don't be an asshole. Don't go out of pocket and go attack family, okay? I know there's a lot of people that do that. There's a lot of people in this eFed scene that if drama starts, they will harass. They will legitimately harass anybody that is like associated with the person that they're in conflict with. If you do that, you're an asshole. You don't belong in this game. You don't belong anywhere near that. You're just a clout chaser and a drama starter because you don't have a life. You like to make people miserable and harass and bully people because it makes you feel better. Which leads to my number one thing I've learned. Don't let outside influences that have bad reputations tear you away from what the sole purpose of your product was. So don't let people who have a bad reputation take something you worked on for so long and twist it to the point where you forget what your core values are. At some point, ratings, merch, clout, views should never get in the way of family. You make a family, you treat them with respect. You don't push them and prod them and degrade them saying, it's not about that anymore, it's about the views. It's not about views. You're not a multimillionaire. You're not getting picked up by radio stations and TV stations. You're not getting sponsorships. Sure, you got a merch store for your t-shirts. But guess what? What's more important? Having fun treating people with respect? Or doing anything to get clout and views because that's something you want to get more money from? Because if you lose sight on family, you lose friends. And I've noticed that this past year. UWO, we're going to bring it up. That is a prime example of losing touch with reality. Making it about views when it was actually about family. Allowing outside influencers to get inside your head and completely ruining everything. Damaging a lot of friendships. Damaging your reputation. And now people have a hard time trusting you and letting you back in because you allowed person A and person B to control your mindset and take everything you've ever worked for and turn it into a toxic wasteland. Don't allow toxic people into a place when you know they are bad. You may think because they can get you into this and that, that it's all fine and dandy, but when you start seeing the damage that they're causing, you get rid of it. You get rid of the damage. You repair it. You make it your own place again. So those are the top 10 things I learned about ESETs. So with that being said, we're going to move on to the next segment. All right, now that we've got the ESET stuff out of the way, let's talk a bit about horror movies. That's right, spooky season doesn't have to just be on Halloween. It can be 24/7 if you are a horror movie buff like myself. So let's talk a bit about what made headlines. What broke the bank, so to speak. So let's talk a bit about, first, the Chucky TV series. Now, I got a chance to watch the entire first season. I might do a rewatch to see if there's anything I missed, any like Easter eggs or nuances. But we're going to talk a bit about the Chucky TV series. And a little fun fact for you. If you are a One Tree Hill fan like me, you might recognize one of the female cast members. That's right. The rich mom is played by Barbara Allen Woods, who played Nathan Scott's mom, Deb Scott, on the hit CW show, One Tree Hill. So, it's kind of crazy how there's a little bit of a tie-in on that. But I followed this journey, and I gotta say, holy shit, so much better than the, you know, remake that happened not too long ago before that, where they completely changed Chucky's look. They really made old school Chucky hot again. Made Chucky, Chucky. And that is something you do with a horror movie. You make it so it has nuances of the past, but it's modern. But you don't aesthetically change everything to where it's unrecognizable. You stay true to what the character is about, what the character looks like, and you add nuances like that. That's how you build revitalize credibility within that franchise. Now, I hear it's being picked up for a season 2. Am I excited? You bet your ass I am, because Chucky, Child's Play was one of my favorite movies. I liked watching them high, because Chucky is much more funnier when you're stoned for some reason. Like a 2-foot freaking evil doll being sarcastic and killing people when you're high is just absolutely comedy gold for me. But another horror news. Let's talk about Halloween Kills and some of the controversy, that a lot of the, we'll say, overly sensitive people in communities are like, why did you do that? Why did you do that? Why did you do that? So, as you know, Halloween Kills is probably not the most liked, but it's also still the most universally liked of the revived Halloween franchise. Now, it doesn't follow H2O and Resurrection and Halloween 3 and the Rob Zombie remakes. It's literally an adaptation of the first film. And the kills are crazy. As a deathmatch wrestling fan, my favorite kill, and spoiler alert, was when Michael Myers took a light tube and just jabs the old lady in the throat with it. That is my favorite kill. But now let's talk a bit about the controversial kills. The gay couple and the firefighters. Now, there's a bunch of Karens out there. We'll call them Karens because they will find any means to find anything offensive. But Michael Myers doesn't discriminate on race or sexual identity. You're in his way, he'll kill you. That's how he is. That's his motive. He's a killer. He's not a picky eater. So get that out of your heads. My honest opinion on Halloween Kills, the kills are great. Okay? The plot is there, but the side story they had just didn't really fit the motives. You know? The whole evil dies tonight thing was a little repetitive and a little hokey. But overall, it was a good movie. It was good. I have to give it at least an 8 out of 10. I think actually that's a little too generous. I think I'd give it like a 7.5. But yeah, there's that. In horror video game news, though, developers have released a trailer, and Kane Hodder himself has confirmed that they are working on a brand new game. Texas Chainsaw Massacre finally gets a video game adaptation on its own, not just a feature on Dead by Daylight or modded Friday the 13th games or just modded games in general. The reason Kane Hodder confirmed this is because, much like he did on the Friday the 13th game, he's doing a lot of the mocap for Leatherface. So that's something to look out for. As we are on the topic of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if you haven't seen it already, folks, a trailer for Netflix. There's going to be a new Texas Chainsaw movie. Is it going to be an adaptation to the originals? Is it going to be another, like, out there remake? Is it going to be an origin story? I have no idea. But from what I've seen, the new Texas Chainsaw movie looks to be based off of the original. So it's going to be very exciting to see what happens, how it looks. I can't wait for the presentation of it. It's just really exciting to be a horror fan now. Another really good movie, like, that broke the bank this past year was the new Candyman movie. Now, a lot of people went in there with some high expectations. When you go into a movie with extremely high expectations, no matter what, you're going to be disappointed. Now, was Tony Todd heavily featured? Not necessarily, but it was still a decent movie. It still followed the same structure as the original Candyman movies did. In my opinion, the new Candyman was easy to sit through. It was enjoyable. Could have been better? Yes. But it was a good movie. It was. Now, they're coming out with a new Scream movie. That one I cannot wait for. I'm excited for that. Beyond excited for it. So when it comes down to the brass tacks, the Friday the 13th lawsuit is over with. But we may or may not see any more movies or adaptations to the video game. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is getting a video game and a new movie. Kane Hodder is a freaking legend. The Chucky TV series is kick-ass. All in all, I gotta say, last year to the start of this year has been a pretty damn good year for horror movies and horror fans. Now, with that being said, let's move on to our next topic. All right, let's talk music. Let's talk about some of my favorite new artists that I've discovered and some of my favorite current and past artists that have made 2021 awesome. So, Iron Maiden came out with a new album, and it was freaking insane how melodic and kick-ass it was. These guys are still rocking it and are still as timeless as ever. Bruce Dickinson is literally still the hottest vocalist out there. One of, I should say. Mastodon put out one hell of an album as well. Just, I guess you could say, beautifully chaotic and just surprisingly melodic and just raw, enticing, just Some of the best I've heard from Mastodon. Is the entire album a perfect 10? No, there's some songs I like better than others. But still, a very enjoyable record. Another band I've been really into, Spirit Box. I recently just got into them. I really, really love their song, Sun Killer. It's just, not a lot of people listen to stuff like Spirit Box, and they kind of go under the radar for a little bit until they start gaining more traction. And that's the case of Spirit Box right now, as they have been getting hotter and hotter and hotter. It's like Code Orange. Code Orange got a lot of exposure through NXT, through making Bray Wyatt's theme song for his Fiend character. Now, we're going to be talking about some of those things, the mass releases that have happened over the past year for WWE. We're going to go through that in just a little bit, in the decline of their content value. But this is music. Let's talk music. So, Spirit Box is one band that I recently discovered that I really, really like. A new band that I recently, like, just in a matter of a week, discovered was a band called Second Sight. They only have one song out. It's called Chaos Town, and it is phenomenal. Absolutely good. It's like a throwback to 2000s alt rock or hard rock. It's a very good band to listen to. I really hope some new stuff comes from them. But in the light of new music coming out, we've got ourselves some new Echoes from Oblivion coming out this year. We got new Avenged Sevenfold, new Slipknot coming out. Hell, Def Leppard's back on tour. Bon Jovi's going back on tour. I forget who else is all going on tour, but we are seeing bands from the past coming back. We're seeing places opening up. But there's still risks because of the pandemic. But folks, the music scene is still thriving. Case in point, new bands such as Vended. Now, I got a chance to listen to some Vended stuff. Love it. Absolutely love it. Citizen Soldier. Try saying that when you have a migraine. But I can't even say Soldier half the time. Citizen Soldier. Really good artist who talks about, who sings about mental illness. Excuse me. So, that being said, there's hella artists out there to look at. Emma McGann recently put out a song with Linkin Park's Mike Shinoda. It's called Teary Eyed. Beautiful song, by the way. You have artists like Madison Moon still on the rise. You have artists like, you know, just those people are just phenomenal artists on the rise. You can literally check out on Spotify new releases, like the new release radar, and you will see new bands and even old bands still coming out with music. You know, Daughtry released some new music. Phenomenal stuff. Taking Back Sunday had something. Bullet for My Valentine's new album is great. Alice Cooper put out some new stuff. You know, Billy Talent has some new stuff. All these bands are just putting out bangers and some really good stuff to look into. And I think music is one of the main reasons why 2020 and 2021 were easier for me to go through. And I can't wait to see what happens. I can't wait to see what new albums come out and take the scene by storm. New Alter Bridge coming out in the future as well. That's going to be great. Tremonti's working on a new album. Miles Kennedy's working on a new album. There's new Motley Crue apparently in the works. There's new... Well, there's not new Van Halen because obvious reasons. But there's also, like, it's crazy to think about it. The pop punk scene has lit back up. Avril Lavigne is back. Avril Lavigne is back with her original style, that 2000s pop punk style. And it sounds so good to hear, and it's so good to see her back. You got bands like All Time Low coming back. You got bands like Taking Back Sunday coming back. All American Rejects, Sum 41, Billy Talent, Simple Plan, State Champs. You know, all these bands that we all grew up listening to in the 2000s through our high school and emo phases are coming back. MCR, My Chemical Romance, yes, back together. But who knows what's going to happen? Is there going to be a new album? Are they going to go back on tour? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? Is Gerard still doing his solo stuff? Is Ray Toro doing his solo stuff? Music is unpredictable. Okay, especially now with the pandemic going on. All I can say is metalheads, punk rockers, musicians, music fans in general, be ready, because there's going to be some crazy-ass stuff coming this current time. This year is probably going to be one of the best years for music, I hope. So, yeah, that's my take on some music stuff for you guys. Well, we talked music, we talked horror movies, we talked e-feds, we talked personal. Let's talk about professional wrestling and sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it. We are going to start off with the craziest thing and the saddest thing. Now, let's start things off with what the fuck was WWE thinking with these quote-unquote budget cuts, yet they make mass profits beforehand. Now, a lot of speculation and rumor is that WWE is gearing up to sell to Disney or to whichever investor wants the promotion. Other people think WWE, like Vince McMahon is grooming step down and give it to Nick Khan. There is a lot of speculation and rumor as to why WWE is doing this. But let's take a look at some notable names that they have released. Let's start with Braun Strowman, now going by his real name, Adam Scher. That was a very shocking release, but also predictable release, because WWE, you know, there's no critical thinking. So it's very easy to see why a lot of people that lack critical thinking still gravitate towards a promotion that's based off of no critical thinking when it comes to storyline development and talent treatment. You've seen Mia Yim. You've seen Taya Valkyrie barely even get a chance. You've seen John Morrison get released. You've seen Samoa Joe get released and come back, and then to get released recently again. Drake Maverick gets released for a second time. The biggest ones were William Regal, were Bray Wyatt, and much, much more of these names. WWE has released a huge list of names this past year. It's so hard to keep up with them. And, like, there's these marks out there that go, oh, AEW's picking up every WWE superstar. Yet they've only picked up a small handful. Just ones that Tony Khan deem beneficial. With that being said, why do you think WWE is doing this? As they slowly see ticket sales go down and ratings go down, that they get so desperate at times to try and draw people in. And we're going to talk about how they completely ruined NXT with this NXT 2.0, where they're literally pushing out everything Triple H has done, just completely erasing Triple H's handiwork. While Triple H was flat on his back with a cardiac issue, with heart issues. Now, it's no secret that AEW beat the living shit out of NXT. But don't take it out on your son-in-law, Vince, especially when he's dealing with cardiovascular situations, pulmonary issues. He has a heart problem from all the steroids that you made him pump through to get bigger. But then again, he also did bodybuilding, but I'm not shaming Triple H. That's the thing. With the releases in WWE, we've seen them kind of grow into bringing in college athletes. So it's kind of a interesting dynamic to see where they're going, but still does not excuse the fact that their product isn't as entertaining as it used to be. Now, for the simple-minded or those who are loyalists and just watch it because that's all they watch, they don't watch outside the promotion, they don't realize that you're seeing the same product before your eyes over and over again. It's like somebody preaching something to you and they just preach the same thing over and over again, or the teacher teaching you the same subject and the same lesson plan over and over again. One, you're not getting what you need out of it. Two, you're starting to grow tired of it. Three, there is no chance in hell you're actually going to be able to succeed with that kind of lack of direction. In my opinion, if WWE needs to get better, they need to stop being predictable, stop being, I guess, less critical with their thinking. Because critical thinking is important when it comes to creating storylines, just as much as it's important in real life. A lot of people lack critical thinking nowadays. We're not going to go into that because that'll be for a much more one-sided podcast that I probably will never do. But let's just say it involves certain belief factors where you're not allowed to think for yourself because that is considered immoral and sinful in nature. But I digress. It's not about religion. It's about what's going on in WWE right now. The decline in ratings and the decline in ticket sales and the decline in viewership fluctuates, much like any other talent or show or whatever. But if it's on a steady decline in productivity, releasing people doesn't help unless you're releasing your writers and you actually bring in people that know what the hell they're doing. But since you want to be more entertainment-based, you're kind of losing touch in reality of what entertainment truly is. That's why I haven't watched WWE television since WrestleMania last year. Now, let's move on to the rise of deathmatch wrestling. Now, this is something I wanted to talk about. I truly believe that 2021 was the year of the deathmatch and the year of Game Changer Wrestling. Why? Because of the exposure it got through Dark Side of the Ring with people like Nick Gage and Jon Moxley, who also was an AEW superstar. But AEW helped launch more exposure to Game Changer Wrestling with a very awesome storyline between MJF and Chris Jericho. We've seen Nick Gage, who was recently popular over his episode on Dark Side of the Ring, make an appearance on AEW television in a main event segment match, in a deathmatch style kind of concept against Chris Jericho. Now, we've seen a plethora of other GCW guys go to CZW, or go to CZW, that too. We'll talk more about CZW probably on another podcast, but we've seen a plethora of GCW guys go to AEW, including Ricky Shane Page and a few other names that I cannot remember at this time. But I say unto you, my lovely followers, that what made GCW hot in 2021? It wasn't just the exposure on AEW television or the Dark Side of the Ring or Nick Gage's story. There is one man, one catalyst to getting eyes onto the product, which helped open the door for people like Jeff Jarrett, who you recently just saw hit Effie with a guitar. We are seeing Kevin Nash come in, Rhino come in, Sabu coming in. We are seeing a lot of people coming in that were big names to GCW because there's a lot of eyes and there's a lot of interest in that promotion. The rise of GCW and the rise of deathmatch wrestling has gained so much traction that GCW and Brett Lauderdale have been able to secure one of the most historic venues in professional wrestling. I am not talking about Madison Square Garden. I am talking about the Hammerstein Ballroom, which has seen the likes of Ring of Honor, WWE, and ECW. Game Changer Wrestling will be at the pinnacle by going there, by making history for their promotion. And you want to know who's going to be in the main event making that kind of history? I will tell you. It's going to be Jon Moxley, the GCW champion. I forget who he's facing, but we are going to be seeing Jon Moxley put the championship on the line for the first time ever in Hammerstein Ballroom on January 23rd. Now, like I said, there's one man who helped make all this happen. Believe it or not, it's Mr. Always Ready, Matt Cardona. Matt Cardona, a while back, said he would love to do a death match now that he's no longer in WWE. He was formerly known as Zack Ryder. So, lo and behold, the rivalry with Nick Gage happens. And this was a very awesome thing to be a part of and witness. Both men going back and forth with each other on social media and on the podcast, and just causing each other massive amounts of mayhem and bullshit and destruction. It was crazy. And when it came to GCW Homecoming, that event, night one, holy shit, what a night. What a match. It seemed to be that Nick Gage would be continuing his reign as GCW champion this past year. But the outsider coming in, the pretty boy that was a sports entertainer coming into the world of the rough and tough deathmatch scene in GCW, dethroning, and I repeat that word, dethroning the king of the deathmatch, Nick Gage, proclaiming himself to be the new deathmatch king, arguably becoming probably one of the greatest heels to ever hold the Game Changer Wrestling Championship, is Matt Cardona. Matt Cardona would later go on, lose the championship to Moxley. That's pretty damn cool to see. Moxley's now the champion. Cardona would feud with Effie for a little bit. Now, we don't know what Cardona is doing now. But with that being said, I think Matt Cardona helped launch GCW into the light, into the stratosphere that it already is. And you got a lot of young upstarts that are also responsible for this. You got literally little teenagers as young as 16, 17, and the likes of Billy Starks and Nick Wayne. Billy Starks is a 17-year-old girl with so much heart and passion in her being for this industry that you see it every time she runs down that ramp into the ring, puts on crazy performances in Jersey Championship Wrestling, has had phenomenal matches in GCW, and is regarded as one of the hottest names to come up in the independent circuit at such an age. A 17-year-old girl with these bright ambitions and a bright future is going to make waves. I see nothing but good things in her future, much like I see in Nick Wayne. This kid is literally the living definition of determination, of perseverance, of resilience, of patience. Nick Wayne, at 16 years old, has already faced the likes of AJ Gray, has faced Chris Dickinson, has faced major names in the independent circuit, and has had put himself on a pedestal to the point where he is regarded as one of the more future names, one of the bigger names, one of the more top-tier athletes at such a young age. Much like Billy, There's nowhere but upwards for him if he plays his cards right. Then you got people like Jordan Oliver, Big Breakfast, the man behind Young, Dumb, and Broke, the East Coast ace. Young kid, tall, got an interesting look to him, phenomenal moveset, charismatic, just an entertaining guy to watch, very graceful in the ring, just getting hotter as he gets in there. This kid is going to take GCW by storm one day, and he's already proven who he can hang with. He's already proven his toughness and his intensity with his rivalry with Atticus Coker, who's another young guy who's doing really damn good for himself in the deathmatch scene and in the professional wrestling circuit. Atticus Coker is one of the hottest heels right now alongside his 440 teammates. Speaking of 440, Ricky Shane Page has been making a name for himself in other places. He's already had many featured spots on AEW Dark and Dark Elevation. So with that being said, the independent wrestling scene, especially in Game Changer Wrestling, is white hot, and you need to watch out for this promotion. You need to check out their affiliates, LA Fights. They just recently dropped a video last night. You got to check out that show. Great card, great matches, phenomenal action. Jersey Championship Wrestling, another phenomenal promotion based out of Jersey and based alongside Game Changer Wrestling. You got Ninja Mac, one of my favorites, the master of the scramble match. Crazy talented guy. No man should do the kind of shit he does. Then you got Sam Stackhouse, who is literally one of the biggest guys I've ever seen. One of the biggest hearts I've ever seen. One of the most prolific and talented guys I've ever seen. So there's some names right there you need to look at. Allie Catch is another name. Effie. Tony Deppen. Okay? You got all these names. Everett Connors. Matthew Everett, whatever they got. Matthew Justice, Mance Warner, AJ Gray. You got all these names to look at and just base your opinions on. Because the independent wrestling scene is smoking hot right now. And I will proclaim that till the day I die. So that being said, folks, normally we end this episode or any episode with our wrestler of the week. But we're going to get to that. Because I know we said we were going to talk a bit about some of the sadder stuff. Because it's usually around this time we wrap up. But 2021 wasn't just all about the highs. There was a couple lows down there. This past year, we lost the likes of New Jack, Spider Boudreaux, Marcus Crane. We lost Betty White last year, just before New Year's. So, with that being said, I want to dedicate this podcast to Marcus Crane, to New Jack, to Betty White, and to everybody we have lost this past year, including personal friends like my friend Jennifer Morton, who is the cousin of WWE Hall of Famer Ricky Morton. So, we are going to have 1 minute of silence starting in 5, 4, 3. 2, 1. Thank you. Now let's move on to the final piece of this podcast tonight. Normally, like I said earlier, when we wrap up with Wrestler of the Week. But you know what? This is all about last year. So we're going to go on and talk about who I think had the hottest year in professional wrestling. So your Wrestler of the Year for 2021 is none other than Always Ready, Matt Cardona. I can't believe I even said that. But Matt Cardona has had the hottest year, whether he was working with Moose, whether he was working with Josh Alexander, or anybody on Impact, or showed up on AEW television for a one-off, you know? Matt Cardona had the hottest year of his career, and in my opinion, was Wrestler of the Year 2021. So with that being said, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. Follow the podcast if you want to hear more topics, hot takes, and more crazy antics. Who knows, there might be some guests in the future. Things might get a little rowdy in the future. Who knows? But I want to thank you guys for coming out to listen. If you enjoyed this, hit that follow button. Go check out Critically Extreme Productions on Facebook, Official John Reagans on Instagram, and Critically Extreme Productions on YouTube. CXW will be returning soon as we get updated software files. So that being said, don't be a jackass. Don't be a bigot. Don't be a punk ass, but be you. Live your life. Stay safe out there. Good night, everybody.